Hello there, and thank you for tuning in. This is Coach Chris Wilson with Team Critical Bench, and I am very lucky to have with me both Mr. Mike Westerdahl, founder of Critical Bench, as well as the injury specialist himself, Mr. Rick Kasselge. Gentlemen, please say hello.
What's up, Chris? Thanks a lot for having us.
Mr. Rick, are you there?
I am here. Thanks, Chris.
There you are. You are far away. You're up in Canada, so I think we might have a second or two delay. Just kidding. What brings us together today is we really want to talk about four exercises specifically in the gym that most of us screw up. But the really neat thing is, because I have both Mike and Rick on the line, we're going to figure out on this call how they can be fixed, okay? And let's begin with Mike, because Mike has a very interesting history in terms of dealing with pain on many levels. So, Mike, please tell us a little bit about your story.
Sure. Well, I'll tell you how Rick and I met up and how we became friends. So my background in fitness, I started training when I was 16 years old. High school and college, I was a football player. After college, I got into powerlifting. So I've been playing sports my whole life and lifting heavy weights my whole life. With that, it's just part of the game. Now I'm almost 38 years old. Body has been through a lot. There's some wear and tear. I've had my fair share of just sports injuries, lifting injuries, and just life injuries. So I'm also, many of you familiar with the website, Critical Bench. That's a site I started in college. It's all about health and strength. And I actually had some of my own injuries that I wanted to deal with, and I wasn't sure who to turn to. Because when I would go to the doctor, which is like the first step, right? You're hurt, and you try to just work around it. Eventually, it just gets too annoying, and you got to go get it checked out. I was getting the same kind of answers. It was like, okay, Mike, stop doing what hurts. So they're telling me to stop playing sports, stop working out, and, you know, give it time to rest and heal.
Right.
It's not like the route I wanted to go. So I knew of Rick just from being in the industry. He actually presents to health and fitness professionals and other people and deals with injuries and rehab stuff. So I went and sought after Rick. And I wanted to consult with him if he could help me with some of the injuries I've had. Now, he's already helped me with a shoulder injury. It was the first thing. I had a partially torn rotator cuff, and he helped me with that. Next, he helped me with some knee injuries that I had from football. I had ACL surgery in 2001, and that was just kind of like some lingering issues with that he helped me resolve. Then, off and on my entire life, I've had a back that nobody really knows what was wrong with it. It would just throw out or blow out sometimes. It happened in high school where I missed a couple football games, went through the whole, I call it the pain cycle, where you go talk to the doctor, they tell you to stop and rest. Eventually you get tests done, you get sent to physical therapy, you run out of insurance money. I don't even know what happened, but it got better for a little while, but it's something that keeps getting injured. Like at least once a year, most of my life, I'd throw my back out. So after Rick helped me with my shoulder and knee, we focused in on my back. So basically, I've been hired him and consulting with him. And because I own a big website that's got a lot of reach, I want to share the information and get this info out to everybody who has having some of the same problems I've had. And that's kind of how Rick and I hooked up and became friends.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, yeah, because Rick, you know, Rick is known as the guy that the other health professionals go to when they're seeking advice on dealing with injury and using exercise as a way to get through it. So, Rick, I know you have a very interesting story yourself, but let's go back a little bit. If you can turn the clock back a little bit, take us back to, you know, your high school, college years and how you got to the point where you are today.
Yeah, in college I went and kind of focused in on kinesiology, because what I wanted to go was into physical therapy, and the route that a lot of people took in Canada was they would end up going to kinesiology. And, you know, while going to college, I ended up doing a variety of work terms, and one of the work terms well, actually two of them ended up being in a physical therapy clinic to see if I really wanted to be a physical therapist. And looking at, to see what they do, the part that I enjoyed the most ended up being the exercise side of things and how exercise was used to help people overcome injury and pain. And so that's what I decided just to focus in on. And so when I went back to school, that's kind of the area that I focused in on, is just the injury side of things. And when I finished up college, I ended up working in a gym, and I ended up working in a rehab center, so I had two jobs. And I pretty much just worked with people with injuries, kind of, you know, teaching them what exercises to do and not to do when it came to their injury, so they can get back to doing what they enjoy doing. Now, part of the reason why that, there was kind of two reasons why that I really focused in on this area. One, I was very passionate about it because I got a lot of joy when I was able to help people overcome their injury and pain. You know, the second reason why was almost self-serving, because I was kind of a person that ended up getting injured often. And I wanted to know, you know, what I could do to prevent myself from getting injured, what I could do to overcome my injuries. So it was kind of a search for myself on what I can do to fix my body and help prevent my body from being injured. Now, I mean, probably the biggest injury in my life that really kind of changed things was I ended up hurting my back. I was doing some heavy lifting one day. I kind of felt my back tweak, and I didn't think too much of it. But then the next day, I just woke up in just agonizing pain. I could barely get out of bed. I kind of had to roll myself out of bed. You know, I tried to walk it off, and it just kept getting worse. At that time, I was working at a physical therapy clinic, you know, helping people overcome their injuries. And, you know, I know when I was driving to the clinic, all I could think about was, like, what did I do? You know, what did I do to myself? I kind of saw the life that I was living kind of pass by me. Like, I wondered if I would be able to go back to lifting weights, if I was going to be able to go and run, if I was going to be able to go, you know, do hiking, which I enjoyed, and I wondered if it was going to affect, my relationships and that kind of side of things, and I kind of wondered if I was going to be like this forever. So I got to the clinic, and I got there a little bit early, so I went in the back of the clinic, and I just sat there, and I laid on ice packs and tried to, decrease the pain that I was having and kind of numb things so I can end up working with the clients. And, you know, I hobbled up. I looked like one of the clients, and there I was supposed to be, you know, helping the clients get better and overcome their injury, and now I was one of them. And I ended up kind of, you know, falling into that pain cycle that so many of them end up living, which is, you know, you end up having pain. And I went and saw my physical therapist since I worked at the clinic, and they kind of looked at things and put me on a couple machines but didn't really give me very much. I went to my doctor, and he kind of gave me some medication and sent me for some tests and told me just to rest. And I kind of knew what my clients ended up doing and the mistakes that they made, and I didn't want to make them, because a lot of times a lot of them would end up resting, and resting is okay to do for a couple days, but you kind of need to get moving. So I knew with myself I needed to keep moving. Even though I was in pain and all I wanted to do was lay down and lay in bed, I knew I needed to get up and get moving, and I always felt a little bit better when I moved around and did something as opposed to just laying there. I knew that I needed to kind of figure out what I could end up doing about my back pain and kind of help fix it, because I didn't want to sit there and wait and go and, you know, get more tests and go see the specialist and go do things. I wanted to kind of take care of my back and fix my back, and that's kind of what I did. And, you know, I was able to kind of fix things, and that kind of led to another part of what I do. A lot of people in my area, a lot of health professionals, a lot of fitness professionals heard what I was doing when it came to helping people with exercise and kind of how to design effective exercise programs with people with injuries. So I started, teaching other fitness professionals and health professionals, and started teaching courses across Canada and the U.S., and I was invited to, present and teach at a variety of universities and colleges throughout Canada and in the U.S., so I kind of became the go-to person when it came to, what to do, what are the most effective exercises for a wide variety of injuries. And now I continue on doing that. I just really just focus on the injury side of things and help. And now I help people around the world overcome their injury and pain with my programs. And I'm happy to say, that experience of me being, me being in excruciating pain, me not wanting to move, me wondering if I kind of had the life that I was enjoying was gone. I'm glad to say that I was able to kind of fix things, and now I kind of utilize a program to kind of help, prevent my back from flaring up or being irritated. And even if I do irritate it, I know what to do to overcome that. So that's kind of my story when it comes
to
the injury world, the injury stuff I do.
I appreciate not only your story, but also, you and Mike both dealt with very, very similar, very similar issues, but your backgrounds were completely different, but you both got caught in that same pain cycle. And it was like, how do we get out of it? Because this typical therapy, this typical treatment that most of us end up doing, we don't seem to ever get out of this chronic pain that we're in, whether it's, knee, back, shoulder, whatever the body part is. And that isn't that just so interesting, but luckily, because you were passionate, more passionate than the next guy, maybe in that industry, because you were dealing with your own level of pain, and you really wanted to get down to the root, which was don't just fix the outside. It was like kind of get in there and reshape.
Which
I know is a big term with you, reshaping.
Yeah, you got to reshape your back from a painful back into a pain-free back. But just working with so many people with injuries, like working in the physical therapy clinic with people with injuries, and then I worked in like a specialized rehab center where we had people with serious injuries. I worked on a team, like a specialist, a doctor, a psychologist, occupational therapist, physical therapist. And I handle the exercise side of things, you could see that mistake that the people would just kind of move through that cycle, and they thought the cycle would end up helping them or fixing things. And the reality, it's really up to us, and we can fix ourselves the best, and we can fix ourselves the fastest. But a lot of times people just don't know, what to do.
I'll jump in.
Please.
I mean, the way I got out of it, luckily, was I called Rick, and he flew out here and visited us. And for those of you listening, if you aren't familiar with Coach Chris, he's actually the head strength coach here at Critical Bench. So when Rick came out, Chris actually had a little bit of a nagging back injury as well. And we got a couple other guys in the office. Anthony, too, had been having some constant issues that had just been nagging him. So we kind of got out of the pain cycle by working with Rick directly and him showing us some different movements and exercises we could do, because really we talked about, Chris and I were talking about this today, we have family members, we have friends that have hurt backs, and I don't know if they use it as an excuse or they just think that they're trapped and that they're never going to be able to be active or exercise. They just say, well, I can't do that anymore, I have a bad back, and it's almost like giving up. It doesn't have to be that way. I mean, I've had a trick back, is what I call it, most of my life, and Chris and I, we just got certified in Russian kettlebells. We've done the Tough Mudder together, competed in powerlifting, playing sports, and going to the doctor and having them tell you to stop it's just like so depressing and earth-shattering to hear that. So that's not something we wanted to do. We had Rick come visit, and we're like, help us so that we can play, so that we can do what we love to do. So, I mean, Chris, you had some results too with Rick helping you, right?
Yeah, no, without question. And well, the reason why I enjoyed it so much, obviously spending all that quality time, I like to call it, with Mr. Rick Cassell, and going through all the different, all the different methods that he incorporates, it's so simple just to add in the 5 to 10 minutes before and the 5 to 10 minutes after what I'm already doing at the gym, once you do it, once you make it habit, it's just part of your routine, and it doesn't feel like you're doing anything extra, but you feel better going into your workouts, and you feel better when you're done with your workouts, it's a plug-in type thing, and it's super quick and easy, and we all deal with different levels of discomfort. Mine was, kind of at the bottom of the, of the chart in terms of intensity, but it was there. And just by, incorporating a few things, voila, it's kind of disappeared altogether for, several months now. So,
One of the things we can do is actually tweak some of our warm-ups or exercises. So, we can jump right into the meat and potatoes of the call here and talk about some of these things in the gym. I mean, I'll just start it off with the first one. It's the hamstring stretch that you see people do, like before they even start working out. A very typical stretch that you'll see people do is to just stand up and bend over with a rounded back and bend down and touch your toes. Now, I mean, you can just tell by looking at it that the rounded back and bending over like that, I feel it. It's supposed to be a hamstring stretch, but if I stretch like that, I feel it in my lower back. Maybe Rick could elaborate a little bit on what's going on there.
Yeah, what ends up happening when it relates to that low back is, we put the back, the lower back, at risk of irritation, injury, and pain when we lose that curve. And when it comes to the hamstring stretch, everyone thinks, hey, stretching is going to help your back. But if that stretching is leading to that curve changing or you losing that curve, you end up putting that back at risk. Because when you lose that curve, there's more stress on the back, you're more likely to irritate it, you'll get back pain, and you might end up getting a full-blown back injury out of it.
Yeah, so
cool.
Really...
What would be a better alternative?
I mean, alternative that ends up working out well is, going into a low back stress position, which is like lying on your back, and then doing the stretch where it's like the leg in the air hamstring stretch. So you would end up, one knee is bent, the other one, you bring the knee up to your chest, and then you straighten the leg out until you feel that tension or that stretch happen in your hamstring, and that ends up keeping your back in a much better position. So the stretch just ends up focusing on that hamstring, and your back ends up being in a safe position.
So, yeah, so basically you're not loading that lumbar spine anymore because you're laying just in a supine position on the ground, one knee's bent, and then one leg like kind of up in the air, and you're just kind of flexing the leg, like repetitively.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Flexing,
yeah,
and extending it.
Yeah, you can end up doing it repetitively, so a short hold, or you can end up holding it for a long period of time. I usually say like 20 seconds, 30 second hold.
So, and then besides that one, so obviously that would probably be your like top stretch that you see people performing incorrectly or doing for, they think they're doing it for the right reasons, but they're actually causing more harm. When it comes to deadlift form, you see people almost all the time, they got their head up, so they're kind of keeping their cervical spine, their eyes are up, and they have that extreme bend in their cervical spine. And then when they get to the top of the lift, they end up driving those hips so far forward and arching their back. They get into this hyperextension type position. Could you go into detail on that?
Yeah. So we talked about losing the curve, but then also we need to kind of look at where our joints are at end range of motion. So end range of motion is like how far you can arch your back or how much you can flex your back. Well, if we start moving into that end range, so like hyperextending or arching or overarching our back in the deadlift, we start going to that end range point of the that the back can end up handling, which might be okay doing here and there, or might be okay if you don't have a weight. But if you are, if you end up having a heavy weight and then you move into that extension, you can end up irritating your lower back. It could lead to pain. It could lead to a full-blown injury. So what what can end up happening is people might end up getting like facet joint irritation. So when you arch back, the joints specifically in your back that come together are the facet joints, and people can irritate those when they kind of overdo it with an overarching deadlift.
Right.
Interesting.
So,
I mean, that's not even one of the obvious ones. I mean, you always think of deadlifting with like a rounded back or having bad form, but I mean, it's really all about this neutral spine, which if people aren't familiar with that, it's having those three points of contact on the back and keeping the spine neutral with the head in between the shoulder blades and then the lower back. If you put like a stick back there, all three points would be touching. That keeps the spine in like a safe, neutral position. And then when you're standing up, you still don't want to hyperextend backwards. And a way that you can fix that is to make sure at the top of the lift that you squeeze your glutes, your quads, and your abs as hard as you can, and that's going to keep you from hyperextending backwards. So that's a quick fix on that mistake, although there are other deadlift mistakes too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, okay, so, you know, in terms of we got a stretch that's done incorrectly quite often and a really obvious deadlift correction there, when it comes to putting your body in another vulnerable position, like with bent over rows, now we can maybe delve into that thoracic spine, you know, that rounded back. So now we got that complete round looking posture like you had with your toe reach, your standing toe reach, but now you're under load too. So go into maybe some detail with that mid-back arch.
Mm-hmm. It, once again, if we end up losing the natural curves in our back, so we kind of have a natural curve in the neck, we have a natural curve in the mid-back, we end up having
right.
a natural curve in the low back, when we start losing those curves, problems end up happening. So in the mid-back, if we end up rounding out too much in that mid-back area, it'll end up throwing the other curves out. So the lower back will end up rounding, your pelvis will end up tilting back, and since we've lost the curves in that whole spine, it puts undue stress on the spine, which can end up leading to irritation, you know, pain, or like a full-blown injury that people end up that people can get.
So it's, you know, so the correction for the bent over row would technically be very similar to the deadlift, you know, just having that three points of contact stack up where the head, neck, mid back and low back just form a really nice line and keep your spine in that the best alignment through the lift.
Yeah, it would be, neutral spine is one part of it, but then the other two parts is looking at your pelvis, because your pelvis will end up, your spine will follow your pelvis wherever it goes. If that
right.
pelvis tilts back, that low back will round out. If that pelvis ends up going forward, it'll end up rounding. It'll end up overarching. But then also when
right.
it comes to, you know, the rest of the spine, you know, if the head drops, you know, the mid-back, the curve in the mid-back will change. If the curve in the mid-back changes, then the curve in the low back changes. So the other things are to remember, you know, keeping that pelvis in a good neutral spot, and usually that links up with the keeping that low back in a neutral position. And then also understanding how important that mid-back and head are to the health of that low back. So, you know, dropping the shoulders or rounding that shoulders, not setting the shoulders or not being strong in the shoulders when you're doing that bent over row, it can really irritate and injure the back.
Yeah, even your shoulders too. I mean, definitely want to keep those shoulders packed as you're doing the rows and not let it pull forward too far.
And that ends up being a common mistake, dropping the head and not packing the shoulders.
And you do see it. I mean, it's not too hard to be guilty of it yourself, even when you know how to properly perform the lifts. You know, it's just kind of your body can get lazy if you're not 100%, you know, focused on the movement that you're doing. So let's get to the fourth movement that's one of the most common exercises that you see, which is your squat. And whether you're doing, you know, barbell squats or a dumbbell squat, you see that tail tuck. You see people, it's like they're dropping low, but they're getting that pelvic tilt to work against them because they're starting to like almost tuck their hips underneath them. Could you go into some detail on that particular movement?
Yeah, a lot of
I'll just jump in too and just remind everybody, trouble picturing any of this stuff, we are going to post below this call, this interview. We've got a PDF that shows you like pictures of correct and incorrect form. So we do have a couple more to go over. But if you're having trouble picturing anything we're talking about, you can have that PDF and you'll get a good example of it all. Okay, so go ahead, Rick.
Perfect. I mean, a lot of times people end up being good when it comes to their neutral spine. Their pelvis ends up being in neutral. But when they start end up adding movement, you know, things those curves end up changing, especially at the bottom part of like a squat or specifically like a goblet squat, that pelvis will end up tucking. So that pelvis will tilt back, and since the pelvis is kind of hooked up to that lower back, the lower back will tend up rounding out. And, you know, like I've mentioned a number of times, if we lose that curve in that low back, we kind of put that back at risk of injury.
And obviously, you know, when you're loading your back substantially, whether you have weight in front of you with like a front squat or goblet squat or traditional back squat, and that is one that you see people, you know, it just looks it's so evident when they get that tucking, you know, when that pelvis does that posterior tilt. And they kind of, you know, have those hips kind of rounding out underneath them. And I obviously in the PDF, that'll be pretty evident in the pictures of it. But it is so common. I mean, you can go anywhere and see it. Now, there's some other bonus stuff in there.
I'll jump in some more on that one,
please,
first, if you don't
please.
Mind.
No.
So I've seen this in powerlifting, too. A lot of times it's when people are trying to squat deep or they're trying to get parallel or below parallel. And I mean, another common mistake is just to have poor range of motion where you do these half squats, and that can lead to all kinds of other issues with your knees. So it's not the exercise that's bad or not bad. It's how you're doing it. It depends on the person. So what's your mobility like? If you're extremely tight and you don't get to parallel and you start pushing past that, that's when you're going to get that tail tuck.
Right.
You might have to work on mobility and stuff to be able to get to a parallel squat with that neutral spine, where somebody else just trying to force it and get deeper than they can, that's when they're going to get that tuck in. So whether you should or shouldn't squat parallel, that's going to depend on each person. Let's say you're not competing and you're not being judged on it. You need to stop the squat at the level where your spine stays neutral and you're not tucking that tail. You work on your mobility and your stretching until you can get deeper and deeper. But when we got tested in RKC, it had different levels of how deep they could go before you lose your form. So I just wanted to add that.
No, I appreciate that, because, you know, you take it for granted sometimes your particular range of motion or ability, and we all have different abilities and different, ranges of mobility. So, Rick, could you just kind of touch on, there's a couple other tips in there in terms of just everyday posture when kind of doing anything that can lead to back issues, and and without even us realizing it, we're causing ourselves trouble.
The one that ends up being the most, and they've ended up kind of calling it like the new smoking, is all the sitting that we do. So a lot of our jobs end up involving sitting. If we don't even work in a job that involves a lot of sitting, we'll end up doing a lot of driving. And then when we get home, we'll end up sitting on the couch, and then, you know, sitting playing on the computer or the iPad. And all of that sitting ends up putting unnecessary load on that low back, and it can also affect other things, other kind of chronic conditions that end up being lethal, that can increase your risk of death. So also understand when it comes to sitting, like sitting puts 40% more load or stress on your back compared to standing. So if you,
wow.
And if sitting lots throughout the day, well, that sitting ends up leading to 40% more stress being put on it. So you want to do, if you are sitting, you want to make sure that you end up having good alignment, and it's a lot of the stuff that we ended up talking about, you know, having neutral spine, having your pelvis being in neutral when it comes to your mid-back, like packing the shoulders, and then stacking that head on top of your shoulders so that your ear, shoulder, hips are in a nice straight line. That'll put the least amount of stress on your back. Now, when we start moving out of poor posture, like dropping the head, rolling the shoulders, rounding the mid-back, rounding out the low back, tilting the pelvis back, that puts even more stress on the back. That could lead to...
That reminds me of a funny story, actually. We went to a Jerry Seinfeld stand-up comic show, and one of his things he was joking about was, all we do is move from seat to seat to seat. He's like, all right, I bet all you guys, you get up in the morning, you sit in your breakfast chair, then you get in your car chair, and you drive to work, and you sit in your work chair, then you get back in your car chair, you drive home, you figure out where you're going to go to dinner, and you sit in your dinner chair, then after dinner, you go drive, and you sit in your show chair to listen to the comic, and then back to the car chair, and then sometimes you get to the couch chair to watch TV. He's like, and then finally the grand finale is when you get to lie down in bed. He's like, that's why the bed trumps everything, because you actually get to straighten out the rest of the time. I mean, it's crazy how much people are sitting. I mean, it depends what your job is, but the amount of time we sit in that crunched sitting position in all areas of our life compared to the amount of time we actually exercise or stretch, it's just crazy to think about.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. Just while Rick was talking, I got up and started walking around because I felt horrible, and my body didn't feel good just sitting there for the length of time we've been speaking. And just getting up and walking around the room, it's just just feels better instantly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I just stood up too. Rick, are you still sitting over there?
No, I'm... When I talk on the phone, I do much better walking around. So I walk around, I'm walking around my room.
Well, that's the way that this whole call should have been then from the beginning, huh? I should have said that. Okay, we're all standing. Now
right.
Let's talk about the four things that you need to work on.
Well, we're getting a little long here on time, but let's finish up with one more. I got one more bonus tip for you guys, something you don't usually think of when it comes to pain, but it is your diet and your nutrition and what you're eating. And you may or may not know, but depending what foods you eat can cause or help alleviate inflammation in the body. So, Rick, you want to jump in and maybe share a couple of things that we should avoid or a couple of things that we could eat that might actually help with inflammation and pain?
Definitely. I mean, I see it time and time again that people, you know, don't really understand that there's a big link between what they eat and their inflammation, and that inflammation ends up being linked to pain. And, you know, the most common thing that ends up leading to inflammation and pain ends up being, you know, eating a lot of processed foods, because we have no idea what's in there that they truly are putting in the food. And a lot of the things they put in end up being inflammatory in nature, especially all the preservatives that's within the processed foods. Now, other things that can end up leading to inflammation ends up being, you know, like dairy. It could end up being gluten. It could end up being soy, alcohol. So there's numerous other things that tend to be inflammatory in nature, and we all kind of vary on what our sensitivity is to those things. So I know with myself, like, I can handle a little bit of a little bit of grains, or like let's say like pasta and bread, but I can't handle a large amount. It ends up inflaming my joints. And same when it comes to dairy. I can handle a little bit amount, but I can't handle a large amount. So it's really kind of looking at, you know, different foods that could potentially be making your pain worse and addressing them. And the ones that I know that I've seen with my clients that affect them the most is ends up being processed foods, you know, looking at, you know, dairy, soy, gluten, alcohol are kind of the most common ones that affect people's pain.
Yeah, and some of them, you know, are certainly very obvious, like your sodas and your simple sugars and stuff, and the stuff that's in a box that has 59 ingredients, you know, that probably 57 of them are not good for you. So it's just that, you know, if you start eating more produce, you know, more vegetation and stuff like that, and, you know, beans and nuts and things like that, I have to imagine you're just naturally going to feel better.
You will feel better. Your joints will definitely feel better. Your joints and your back and your pain will end up being a lot better when you start cleaning up what you end up eating. And it's difficult for people to kind of go, you know, drastically change. It's like if you've ever gone traveling and all of a sudden you go to a third world, let's say you're in the U.S. and all of a sudden you go to India for holidays and you're there for like 3 weeks. Well, the food is totally drastically changed, and it's a lot to take on that drastic change. So I always encourage people just to make small tweaks or decrease the amount or try to find an alternative that you can switch out for what you like to do. So, you know, let's say you like chips, you like potato chips. Those are your thing. You love them. You're addicted to them. Well, maybe try the rice chips or maybe try rice crackers. So you kind of replace that chip type of food with something else that's more of a healthier alternative.
Right. Well, those are all awesome tips, all of them. The four exercise tips, the posture, and a nice little bonus just to, you know, try to start cleaning up your diet. And with better nutrition probably comes, you know, better feeling overall. So
decrease in pain, it will. People won't talk about it enough. I mean, people look at, let's say if you drink too much the night before and you have a hangover, I mean, what are the things that end up making it feel better? It's usually like, you know, hydrating and eating good food are things that speed things up.
Right. Yeah, no definitely. Doubt about it. Well, I want to be the first to say thank you so much, Mr. Rick Kasselge. And it has really been a true pleasure, obviously, to get to know you and to speak with you and for you to share all of these great tips that I know our listeners will benefit from and give them something to think about and certainly take away from the conversation. And then, Mike, did you have any other last things you'd like to say?
No, just thanks a lot for having us on the call. Rick, thanks for sharing the info.
Yep.
Hopefully you guys all got some great content and tips out of this that can make a difference in your lives.
Awesome. No, thanks. Thanks for giving me the chance to share.
It's been our pleasure. All right, Mr. Mike Westerdahl and Mr. Rick Kasselge, thank you both so much, and we appreciate the listeners. You take care now.